Hi, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I'm here, as always, with my beheaded friend, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. Not that you can see the hat, but yes, I am wearing a hat. That's because I was lying down on the sofa typically before this, and I'm watching TV, and my hair is all sticky uppy, especially since I just got it cut. So it's like super short, and it doesn't want to stay under control. So just a little look inside of Craig's life. and I'm Craig Campbell. I'm the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I make a whole bunch of tabletop role-playing games as well. And as of like right now, the Kickstarter is live for a card game, which also has role-playing in it because I couldn't resist to have a role-playing aspect to the card game. But we are here with our guest returning for his second appearance. Jason, hello, welcome.
Hi, I'm Jason Morningstar. I'm the creative director of Bully Pulpit Games, and it's lovely to see you both again.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us.
My
now
pleasure.
Craig, I didn't mention the hat just for no reason. I'm a fan of good segues. We have a great topic for today, and it has to do with your hat specifically. A whole hour just on the hat and different styles of hats.
My many hats, because I wear many hats, publishing and designing games, and I know Jess does as well, and I'm sure Jason has worn many hats at various times over the course of his career. So yeah, we're here to talk a little bit about designing and publishing your games and what other things besides designing and publishing you might find yourself doing, either as like a large, kind of a big deal part of things, or even if it's just like little stuff here and there where you might help with something that someone else kind of mostly does, whether you are doing it because you are completely unskilled at the thing and so you farm it out, but the things that you are skilled at, you do, or maybe you learn how to do some of the things so that you can save some money. There's a lot of different reasons to wear a lot of different hats when you're designing and publishing games on the indie side. So let's go. Jason, this was on our list of possible topics, and this one jumped out at you and you picked it. So why don't you get us started and tell us what hats do you wear? That's going to be the recurring theme here. We can ask each other that.
Yeah. So for me, Bully Pulpit Games is a small company. There are two of us that are the owners, and then we have usually about three part-time contractors that work with us. And so, as you can imagine, those part-time contractors are doing pieces that Steve Sagetti, my partner, and I are no good at. But we find ourselves kind of doing everything that you might have to do to run a small business and to run a game design sort of a boutique, a very small indie game design shop. So I can go through all that stuff, the things that we sort of do as a company and that I have my fingers in the pie, things that I am responsible for in the company, things that I ought to be responsible for, but I'm irresponsible about. there's a lot. Do you just want to go through the list? Is that a good way to start this?
I'm curious about why this topic was speaking to you today.
Okay. All right.
for a discussion, because someone picks this topic, there's something on their mind.
Just likes to start with the feelings.
No, that's good.
How did you
that's
feel
awesome.
This was right for you?
Well, I felt this was right for me because I encounter a lot of people who are excited about game design that don't really have their hands around the whole process, because there are pieces of the process that are really fun and that are energizing and that are creative and that are productive. And there are parts of it that are hard, and there are parts of it that are really tedious and boring and difficult, depending on your interests and skill set. So, like, I think a lot of people approach this, sort of avocation without really being business people or necessarily being fine artists or graphic artists or project managers, right? They want to make a cool game, and they might have the skills to make a cool game, but there are all these other things that you might have to do, or you might have to find someone to collaborate with. And I say might because, depending on your goals, maybe what you need to do is just write down a Word document that you can share with your friends on game night. And that is 100% valid. That is great. If all you care about is making a cool thing that you're going to share with your buddies, there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to do something that's more elaborate than that, then you start having to ask these other questions about things like art and money and management, and that's where it gets more complicated, for sure.
I
And I think it's valuable to share that process and maybe some of those things that are out there that you might want to be looking for a partner for, or finding someone to collaborate with, or improving your own skills at,
think
for
that's
sure.
definitely true. It's basically like it's such a creative, I like how you called it avocation. It's such a creative industry. A lot of people who get into game design get into it because they're really passionate about games and they see a final product. They might go to a seminar, they'll hear some game designers talk about designing, they'll go to a convention, they'll look to meet some and think, I want to do this too. I'm seeing all of this like the end product is amazing. Everyone's really happy playing games, everyone looks really happy. I can do this too. And you get down to it, and it's really hard. I'm not saying like don't do it, obviously. I personally believe anyone can be a game designer. And I love that you said also you do a Word document for your friends to play. That, I mean, that's also game design, just not professional game design. There is a lot of stuff behind the scenes that if you don't dig in further, you aren't like you're not seeing all the struggles. People don't really share. I mean, people share, I feel like a little bit more often, but people don't really share like all of the difficulties and the like all of the minute details of all the hard work that does go into producing even a small game, even a zine, even something that's just a couple pages long, or even a PDF that they're selling on Itch. All of those take a ton of work, and a ton of hats if you're doing it by yourself. I also work with a partner. And it's and I we use collaborators too. Neither me nor my husband can really draw. We can't like do illustrations. We can't do art for our books. Anytime I'm doing it, I'm taking stuff in the public domain or Creative Commons and doing collages, which is that's in my skill set. But if I want something illustrated, I gotta hire a collaborator. Am I the skills that my husband and I work on with our games, we also have very different skill sets too. For example, he doesn't know how to use a semicolon and I do. And those can sometimes be important. They can sometimes be important in your manuscript.
I think Jason hit the nail on the head with the comment that people maybe don't know. And I think, there are certainly people who do. They come in kind of, they've done their research, they've thought about it, they've maybe talked to somebody like Jason. But there's plenty of people that come in not knowing. And I kind of did that. Like when I started designing Mergers and Acquisitions and working toward a Kickstarter on that, I had no intention really at that point of necessarily doing another game. I was just like, I want to see if I can make a game. But even during that process, I found myself realizing, oh, there's all sorts of things that I either need to find someone to do or partner with to help with, or I just need to learn how to do them. So I had to start wearing those hats. And the nice thing about doing something as a side gig when your day job kind of takes care of your finances and keeps you, housed and fed and everything, is that you can learn that stuff as you go. You can learn it as you need it. Like I didn't learn how to really write art orders as an art director for myself until I needed art. So when I was doing initial design and playtesting and stuff, I wasn't worried about that yet. But there came a point where I had to kind of figure out, well, how do I communicate what I'm looking to do to an artist because I can't draw either and I'm not going to try to do any artwork. So I had to kind of figure out how to do that. Now I had the luck of having at the tail end of my time doing some freelance stuff for Wizards of the Coast, Chris Perkins offered me to say, "Hey, would you like to write the art orders for your articles?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he explained to me what writing an art order was, and so I did. So I got to do a few like that, and then I, had to do them myself for pretty much everything since then. But you learn how to, like, if you're going to have a website, you might find yourself designing your own website, or at least getting, maybe you get someone to design it, but then you learn how to, you can edit it and update things. There's a lot of stuff that you can potentially be doing. And you can learn it at the speed of necessity, when you've got it in the, when you're doing it on the side. But you have to be cognizant of what those things are going to be and when they're going to come into play. And one of the things that I've run into too with wearing the many hats is that you've only got so much time and effort available. And there comes a point where you're very focused on the design work and you're hoping you're not going to have to do a bunch of that other stuff. But then there comes a point where the design's kind of coming together and maybe it's play testing, and then you're going to start doing some of these other things, and just knowing where you're going to put your time and effort for a bit, and kind of giving each of the roles that you're playing its due when it needs to be given its due, which is a whole time management, kind of managing yourself thing that is like a skill to develop for yourself if you don't already kind of have that skill.
I have two thoughts there that I definitely want to sort of put in sharp relief in this conversation. And the first is that you should have a goal, and if you have a good idea of what your goal is, that will help you fill in the pieces that you're going to need to learn or to get help with or whatever. And your goal can change, and that's fine. Your goal may not be to publish a perfect bound 8.5 by 11 book or whatever, and that's great, especially if you're brand new and you're just starting out. Maybe make a zine or a little PDF and see what the pieces are that you hadn't anticipated. That's one thing. The another is that excuse me. Another is that it's a very friendly industry typically, and you can ask for help. You can ask for advice. There are people who have done this and will be happy to tell you how to do it within reason. But there's no reason not to reach out to people and say, "Hey, I need to make an art order, and I know that Craig talked about it on his podcast. Maybe he can tell me what exactly that means, or maybe there's an episode about it." So use the community, be part of a community, and find ways to do these things. I think those are both really important points. I don't want anybody to listen to this and be like, "Oh my gosh, that's so much stuff. I don't want to have to learn all that. I don't know how to do those things." Don't be intimidated. Now, the other piece to that is that learning these things is just, it's a great human and professional development too. Like
Absolutely.
I, the skills that I've learned making dumb little role-playing games have been incredibly valuable to me in other aspects of my life. It's a nice set of skills to be able to display professionally, to say, "Hey, you know what? I've run a small business, or I've been an art director. I've laid out publications. I've marketed things. I've done project management." These are all things that other people aren't, they're not going to care about the game piece of it, but they'll be impressed with the skills. And so learning how to do that stuff is not time thrown in a black hole. It's valuable to you in other aspects of your life for sure.
I'm so like these. This touches on two of my favorite things in the world, which is learning and teaching and being part of a community. Those are my two absolute favorite things. You should always just try to learn skills anyway, even if they're not related to game design. I feel like you said, personal professional development, just for your own sake, even, is very good for you. It's good for your brain. It's good for your spirit. You can do that. Like, there are programs out there. For example, Unpub does a tabletop games mentorship, and you get paired up with a mentor, and they can help you with whatever skill you're trying to acquire. They can help you learn how to network. They can help you learn how to design your game, how to do layout. They can walk you through those steps or help you fill in those blanks. Either finding a mentor in like a organized format like that, or reaching out to people who you know or you've made a connection with, and asking them like, "Hey, would you be willing to help me walk through this. I wouldn't recommend reaching out to just like somebody you've never contacted with and say, hey, will you be my mentor? That's not really how that works. But people that you know, maybe you met them at a convention, you sat in, listened to their talk, you know something about them, that like I would always be stoked if somebody reached out for me to me and asked me for help for advice. I'm a teacher, so it's kind of in my nature. And then there's also organizations like Craig and I have talked a lot about being in the IGDN. There's other organizations too out there that are places for game designers. A lot of them aren't like super great spaces for people who are learning how to be. Maybe that is a gap that some intrepid person who has more time on their hands other than me can fill. But yeah, just gosh, like learning those skills. There's so many skills I've learned that I thought I had known already, just from being a teacher and living my life up until I started designing games, that I didn't actually know and learned through the process. I had to start doing it before I learned the process. So I think when you also get started, you have to, maybe one of your hats has to be a funeral director, and you have to put down a game that you really wanted to make because you don't have the skills yet. And
it happens to me all the time.
Yeah.
I think that's a really valuable skill to cultivate, to know when to put it away. I wouldn't, I'd call it put it in the parts drawer rather than bury
funeral.
It and have a ceremony. But it's the same principle.
I call it putting it on the shelf, because you might take it back off the shelf, or you might look at some part of it from the shelf.
That's, I don't know why we're thinking that people can't rise from the graves, vampire. This happens all the
come
time.
Come on, Jason. She's right. She's totally right. We are like people of imagination. We should have been able to assume that rising from the grave.
On that note, I think the place where you get sort of the journeyman experience, maybe at this point, is Discord. You find things like communities like Explorers Design, which is a place where you could like throw up your layout and people will critique it in a very thoughtful way, even if you suck at it. And it's a friendly community of people who are really thinking about visual design specifically for games. And if you get involved there and you help other people embrace mutualism, which is something I say all the time, then people will help you out. And those same communities exist for other pieces, other hats that we're talking about today, for sure.
Speaking to Jess's comment about, you know, not necessarily asking someone directly, will you be my mentor? A handy way to get around that is to ask that person, do you know of anyone or of an organization where I might find mentorship? And if that person is somebody who's interested in mentoring, they might volunteer themselves or start that conversation. But, you know, speaking like absolutely worth looking for mentorship, critique, just opportunities to learn in a lot of different ways. And there's a lot of places to find that sort of thing. It's a question of just finding the places.
And cultivating trust. The best way to do that in my mind is to help other people. So, you know, volunteer or help people playtest their stuff. Don't expect reciprocity. But when the time comes, if you ask for help, they'll probably give it to you. Similarly, it's not hard if the thing that you need is tangible, like, can you show me a description of an art order? Can you send me a sample contract? Sometimes those things are pretty easy for people. If they're not going to commit to having a relationship with you, they can still support you by giving you examples. And sometimes that is effective if what you need is something that is a model. What you need is the model rather than a process.
So archivist, art director, mentee, mentor, student, what's a hat that surprised you that you had to put on while you were making games, whether early on in your career or any part during your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. One that I can talk about a couple. One that I really struggle with is marketer. There's an expectation that you have to tell people about your game and tell them it's cool and tell them they want to buy it. And that is very antithetical to the way I think about things. So that's been a struggle for us as a company, like budgeting and spending money on marketing, crowdfunding as a form of marketing, parasociality, which some people really dive into, and I can't, and so I don't. But there are people for whom that is part of the equation, and they want fans, and they want to cultivate a personality online that might be different from who they really are, and that's a thing. That's part of this process for some people. Certainly, marketing writ large is something you have to think about. And marketing can also be of helping other people, participating in events, being a judge in a contest, going to conventions and running games. All that stuff is ways to make people aware of you and the cool things you're doing. But that is one that was not something that I really had thought much about. I just thought being excited about it and making good things would be enough, and it's not.
All the people that I knew that designed games before, that I knew personally who designed games before I started designing games, I never saw them do any marketing. I didn't know what their marketing process was like. Honestly, I don't even know if they had a lot of marketing other than like their Kickstarter pages, their Facebook page, and being at conventions. So I was completely unprepared for that as well. That was one of the total gaps that, gosh, I don't even know how my game got out to people in the first place. I have no idea. I still, this is a hard for me too. If I had money, I would hire a marketer. But now I have to do it myself.
It's definitely something I struggle with, and have since like I first started making an attempt. One of the things that one of the roles hats, sorry, everybody, one of the hats that I've come to wear that there's two in particular that jump out at me is like I was surprised that I suddenly had to know all of this stuff, and I'm going to say is accountant. And not that I didn't understand that I was going to need to keep track of money and figure out, okay, I'm going to pay some people and I'm going to have to, pay for getting the book made or whatever, and conduct, doing a Kickstarter and knowing what your, what your funding goal is and what you need all the money for and covering fees and all that sort of thing. I knew that all that sort of stuff was going to happen, but I found that there's like once you get to the point of if you've got multiple projects going on at the same time of very different types, you're suddenly dealing with a lot of different little bits and pieces of how you move money around and what you have to do. And then, as an example that we are all dealing with as of right now, as we're recording, it's May 3rd, 2025.
I know what you're about to say.
I'm doing a card game that I'm getting made outside of the United States, and I know more about tariffs right now than I knew a month ago, and I know a lot more about tariffs now than I knew a month ago. That was another one that just kind of bit me in the ass. I was like, all right, I'll hire a customs broker to help me navigate the process of getting everything into the country, and they'll tell me what forms I need to fill out, and I'll get the information I need to them, and then like my spreadsheet blew up. For accounting for all of this sort of stuff. So I had to figure that all out. And I'm actually in the position right now of like I will likely, because of the situation that we're in, I will likely have to make the call on which manufacturer I'm going with on the day I place the order, because I have no idea what the tariff situation is going to be like. So that one was, and that goes not just for the tariff thing, but for all sorts of accounting stuff and having to do with making sure that you're treating everything that you're doing like a business. One of the things that I recognized very early on, and I pointed out to people, is you're going to do a Kickstarter, you're going to put a game out there, you're a small business owner. You may think you're just doing a little hobby thing, but you're a small business owner, and your local tax jurisdiction is going to consider you a small business owner. So you have to take that seriously. So you need to have your ducks in a row. And the other one that kind of came out about the time I was wrapping up the Kickstarter for Capers and starting to get that ready to go was community manager.
Oh yeah, good
I hadn't
point.
really thought too much about. I had somebody who was backing Capers said you should really have a Discord for Nerdburger Games. I had never heard of Discord, and the Discord has become like one of my greatest resources. But I had to learn how to manage it, manage the people in it. I've got a person that kind of helps to oversee if there's problems that pop up. You know, like they have full ability to boot somebody so that it's not me, the owner of the company and the owner of the Discord, who's got that control, because all putting all that control in one hand is terrible. But then also just, you know, finding how to use that, how you're using that community to serve your purposes, what your purpose is for the community, how it invites people in, how you interact with people while you're there. You know, I've had missteps. I've had times where I felt like I was talking with friends on the Discord, and I realized that no, some of them are just mostly kind of strangers. They kind of know my game maybe, and they maybe get a sense of who I am from some other posts, but then I make a joke and it doesn't fly, and I have to be like, hey, that was a terrible thing to say. I'm going to apologize about that, and I'm going to endeavor to not treat people like I'm just talking to my buddies, because that's easy for me. That's too easy for me to do, and I have to be cognizant of that. And that's one of the things that comes in the middle of being a community manager. So that's a hat that I'm constantly adjusting because it's a tough one for me, because I'd never done anything like it prior to Nerdbreaker Games.
Yep, that's something that I'm constantly aware of, and this also. If you're interested in this field, or if you're thinking about it, this is something you can start practicing now, which is that reputation is everything, and the way that you interact with the world never goes away. So you should think about how you want to engage on social media, in person, in ways that are professional and kind, and not be otherwise, because people will remember. And in my own life, you know, I see peers and people who are in this space that just behave abominably, or are just, even if they're just impolite, I note that, I see it, and I don't want to work with those people. I don't want to engage with those people. So, you know, magnify that times 100 billion, and, you know, you should be thinking about how you present yourself, which isn't the same as having a parasocial persona that you adopt necessarily, but it is, you know, something to be aware of. You know, that off-color joke, you know, that's not something that is going to be forgotten. And you know, I'm sure that Craig, you made whatever amends you needed to, but like that's a mistake that's an avoidable mistake, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the most important thing that I do in terms of getting my games out to people has been my networking, has been me like going out into public, speaking to people at conventions. This is predominantly where I do most of my elbow rubbing. Like really being aware of how you're presenting yourself and how you're treating other people, huge. I definitely notice, like, especially as a woman at a gaming convention, I notice when people treat me differently. I notice when people are excluding. I mean, it happens a lot with like younger designers. They get excluded from the conversations or the table, and you can kind of see what that happens. Those are things that stand out to me. And then for myself too, like, I mean, I like to party, I like to have fun, but I make sure that I'm still being professional. For me, with my brand, being professional is maybe a little bit different than somebody who's like whole brand is trying to make really big money deals with different companies and things like that. My brand is a little bit different. But if I were, like, let's say if I were doing educational games for children, I would be behaving a different way than my anarchist political games that I do now, my self-published ones. Yeah, I mean, just being a social skills are, like, you don't have to be the perfect social person. There's a lot of people who are anxious and or awkward, believe it or not, in the gaming space. I'm one of them.
It's me.
Yes. It's so many of us.
We are everywhere.
But you do, and, you do do have to talk to other people as a game designer. You do have to talk to them.
And I guess the other piece of this is that we're all going to make mistakes too,
Right.
right? And your reputation is what allows you to recover from mistakes. If people have the trust and love to be like, yeah, it was a mistake, they apologize. Moving on, which is
Exactly.
very different from a situation where you don't have any of that and people are ready to send you to the cornfield. So, yeah, so it goes both ways for sure. I see that too, Jess. I'm really alert to that in social gatherings. Like, who do you give credibility to? Who do you treat as a peer? Who do you treat with respect? Who do you ignore? And those things, you know, I'm my eyes are open to that, and I'm aware of my own privilege and do my best not to be the problem in that equation. But you see it, and when I see it, I'm making mental notes about who is welcoming and kind, who is thoughtful about their privilege in the room, and who isn't. That's, you know, that factors into decisions I make moving forward about who I want to spend my time with, who I want to employ, you know, who I want to work with, collaborate with. If I see someone who's behaving in ways that I just don't think are cool, you know, I'm not going to engage with them.
Some of my favorite moments from doing this and working in the, you know, so-called RPG industry or gaming industry is moments where somebody included me. Where somebody just
Yeah, for sure.
without judgment, they just straight up said, you know, just called me a designer, called me a publisher, said, Aloy LaSanta, I'll tell the story. Aloy LaSanta from Third Eye Games came up to Atlanta, where I live, to go to a convention. I picked him up at the airport. I had just published my first game. I barely knew Aloy. And we're driving up, and he was talking. And at one point, he said, "In our industry," and then he continued talking. And I didn't hear a thing that he said because I heard him say, "In our industry," as if it's just a matter of fact. He's got multiple games under his belt. He's been doing it as a full-time thing. It's how he makes a living. You know, I had published one game that broke, basically covered its expenses on Kickstarter, and I didn't lose money. And that was my claim to fame at the time. And so that sort of thing, that's a big deal. You're absolutely right.
And it's free. It's free. You can do it. If you
It
have
costs you
any
nothing.
credibility, if you have any status, sharing that status with others costs you nothing, and it will make somebody's l year. I had the same experience. Like almost exactly the same experience. Someone was just like, "This is your game is really good. When are you going to publish it?" And it changed my life. Someone I respected, you know. So yes, that's a free one for all you industry people out there. Just be kind to people.
So another kind of changing topics here, a role that I have to do a lot, just like this is kind of the role that I have in my company is editing and making words be good on the page. There's a lot of in a big company, there's a lot of little roles that would be fulfilled by a lot of people. Editing, copy editing, layout editing, all of those
Developmental
things,
editing.
developmental I can talk developmental ed editing. Yes, there's so many of those roles that if you are the only person who's touching your game from start to finish, which I've done before, I just because I wanted to and because of resources, that you have to kind of be even better than somebody you might hire. Because if you've been looking at your game and thinking about your game, and only you for a long time, there are going to be things that you miss along so many of those different stages where another person might catch them because they have new eyes on the project. And kind of coming back to what something you said earlier, Jason, having a collaborator, even for a moment, even like, can I get eyes on this? Can you check my Kickstarter page? Make sure there's nothing missing. Can you look at this cover? There are so many steps along the way that even if it's not like I'm hiring you to do this, it's more like a I scratch my back, you scratch my back, I scratch yours situation. You have to make sure that you're not only wearing all the hats all the time. You're gonna miss something along the way. I don't think a typo is the end of the world, to be honest. I could care less about that, especially in an indie game. I might have something snarky to say if WotC has a typo on one of their pages. But you gotta make sure that you're aware of your editing faults, I guess is what I'm getting at.
I think that applies really broadly, right? More eyes, six brains are better than one. More eyes on a project is going to ultimately improve it. Even asking your partner or spouse to just read it, even if they don't care about role-playing games, if they can look at it and be like, this made sense to me, or I saw an error on this page, or what is this? I don't understand what you're trying to get across. That can be really valuable. To get impressions about the visual design from people who are not experts at visual design. It can also be really useful just because you're right. You can get really myopic about a project that you've spent a lot of time and passion on. You're too close to it. You're going to miss stuff. You're absolutely right. But
There's
that's
a
a, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
something I was thinking too was when we're talking a little bit about bringing other people in to do this or that and help with things, is that in support of the many hats and learning all these different skill sets, you put yourself in a position to, as we've talked about, be kind and helpful and help other people with those things. So that allows you to hone those skills as well. Because I think we all three here
Yeah.
know, and it's very easy to get too close to your own work and see it in a particular light and have a harder time maybe critiquing or picking out something that's a problem. So have other people look at your stuff, but then you can also look at other people's stuff and help them in that sort of same way. And that helps to get things done that, we, Jess, you made the comment about like not being able to, not being in a position to hire proper marketing in the traditional sense, right? Having that money. There's trading labor. There's, you check my Kickstarter, I check yours. And I get better at checking a Kickstarter because I can only check mine so many times before, like, I know the game inside and out. This all seems very, very complete and it tells you everything you need to know. And somebody else is going to come
Yep.
in and say something's unclear. But then you can do it as well. And that helps you build that skill set, which will further help you with the things that you're doing then too
Yep,
for
absolutely. You
yourself.
need, and over time, you'll get better at it. Better at, like, for me, I've been doing this long enough that when I hand my work to my partner, and say, does this make sense? I'm pretty confident that the game will be cohesive, that it'll be functional, and that the developmental edits I get back will not be dramatic, or that it won't make sense to him. That's a skill that I've built up over time as well, and I still do it. There's still a lot of eyes on my games before they, even my little tiny games, before they sort of are exposed to the public. A lot of eyes, because I really value that, and I want to make sure that I'm not missing something just because I'm focused on it, or I'm missing something because in our company we do things a certain way, or we're, there's lots of reasons why you might miss those really little things sometimes by not letting a lot of people kind of pick at your work. So let a lot of people pick at your work. It's okay, for sure.
Yeah, ultimately, this is a product that you're hoping people play and read, and that means like once you have it published and you have it in your customers' hands, that's kind of it. Like you want people to be able to interact with the text, so you got to get some interaction on the text, and sometimes that's only going to happen like when you're doing your play testing, and sometimes that's going to happen at many, many different steps along the way. Just depends on the kind of designer you are, the kind of project you're doing, and the resources you have, frankly, time and energy and money, all of those things come to play. But I mean, at the very least, sending your game out and getting somebody to read it, play it, please, if you can, before you do it, is okay, so necessary. It's a requirement. I guess I'm not like a diehard, you got to play test your game for a whole year person. I know some people who have very rigorous play test structure, schedules, and I think, no, that's not for me. I'm not gonna play test for a year. I'm gonna publish this now. But you still gotta do it. You still have to. Playtester is another hat I've worn too for other
Yeah, for
people.
sure.
And then like you have to be like, what are those what are they called? Like the audience, the people that like survey audiences, like what did you think about this commercial? Did this invoke feelings of happiness for you? And like getting really good at making like your survey for
I was going to say
playtesters.
that writing a good playtester survey,
Market research.
asking the right
Market research,
questions.
thank you.
Yeah, that's a whole hat you got to wear. It's managing the playtest process. Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure. And that's going to be, you can learn a lot from other people, but in the end, you're going to have to figure that out in a way that works for you and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and different types of games will kind of require different types of questions. You know, a
Sure.
heavily mechanical game with a lot of granularity is going to require, more questions about that stuff than something that's very, very narrative and has, there's no dice and it's all just kind of gain and spend tokens. You're going to be probably asking very different types of questions.
And running different kinds of play tests.
Running, yeah.
I've certainly run play tests where I just said, I want you to hit each other with swords. And when you're done, hit each other with swords again. I don't care about the narrative at this point. I just want to make sure that hitting each other with swords makes sense and is satisfying. And that, like play testing is a gift because sometimes it sucks. And that's a case where it's not super fun, but it needs to be done. And people who do it are superstars that you need to love.
Free little kind of attached note about playtesting. I've done this a number of times. You can have playtesters who look for different things. Like I literally with this last game, I had a group that was kind of like, I want you to put the combat system through its paces. We got to see if this works. And so I had people doing personal combat and doing starship combat and doing starship combat that also included personal combat and all sorts of things. And then I talked to people and it's like I would like to find some people who want to read the story stuff, all the setting, all this sort of thing. And just comment on all that. I've done play tests where I've got like multiple play test groups going and they've all play tested like three, four rounds. And then I finally kind of finished all the manuscript pieces because usually I'm still writing some stuff while they're play testing other things. And then bring in like a new couple of play test groups or something to say, the existing groups that have been play testing, they've figured the game out. They're not necessarily going to read it and realize like, oh, there's a this part's confusing or this part doesn't make sense or I had to read this part three times to understand it. And having somebody come in brand new. So that's not specifically an extra hat thing, but something to useful for play testing.
Yeah,
As
collecting that
a hat
data.
that you wear. Yeah.
Yeah, I think like just I make games, like I said, like where I me and my and my husband are the only people who are working on a game for a very long time and doing development on something. But I've also worked as a freelancer and have done very specific things for other people, editing, writing, layout. I've done all of those. If there, you might find as you're in this journey as a game designer that you don't actually like the entire process, but you like this specific thing. There are opportunities out there for you to do that specific thing if you are good at it, and you're willing to hire out your services for that. Specifically things like, I mean, if you're one of those people who is really good at art and also writing, I think we should ban you from the industry. Go. It's not fair. It's not fair for people like me. But There's always room out there for artists. That was a joke, by the way. I think that you're great if you can do art and writing. I'm just jealous. If you're good at art, editing, layout design, those are three skills that I see people looking for all the time. I know that art is a much more technical skill, but the editing and the layout design, graphic design, if you have developed those skills and you really enjoy doing them, there are not just indie publishers who are hiring out there for that, but like the heavy hitters also hire from time to time new people to join their companies. And then you can get that as like, that's your job now. Your job is to make these pages look nice. Your job is to put the words down on these pages. Or maybe you like to be a community manager or a marketer. Like, God, like everyone wants one of those. All of those little skills that maybe you just don't like the whole process. You can still be in the games industry and not be a I'm doing everything person. I For some people, that's the dream. Some people want to do everything though, like me.
It's an incredibly valuable set of skills that you just described there, Jess. And if you are a project manager who can also do any of those other things, people want you. Like those are the contract positions that we have are social media manager, project manager, stuff like that, that are just not in our wheelhouse, that we're just not good at, and that are specialized skills that you need to be good at. So if that's you, and you can stand it, then there's definitely space for you.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
speaking kind of jumping from that, it's like if you find that there are hats that you are trying and they are just not for you, like this I'm not good at this. I don't see myself getting good. I don't want to try to improve. I'll find somebody else to do it. There's this thing that I could be doing, but it just sucks all of the fun out of me and the life out of me. It's okay to have, some of those hats be things like I'll trade labor to get somebody to help me with this thing, or I'll pay a freelancer, or perhaps partner with somebody, rather than doing it all your own, on your own.
100%.
Yeah, it's absolutely okay to know what things are just not your bag, and find other ways to get those things
Can we
done.
talk about some weird hats? I got some weird
Yeah.
hats.
Let's talk
Let me
about some weird hats.
if you've ever seen Jason's like social media posts, you know he literally has a lot of weird
I
hats
do
as
have a
well.
lot of literally weird hats. But these are actually, I could put on a weird hat right now. I'm 3 feet from some weird hats. A packaging design is a weird hat. Working with printers is so hard, because they think differently, and they and anyway, like learning how to speak the language of a printer is a whole thing. That's a weird hat that I never thought I would have to wear, and I have to wear those hats. How do you make a setup box wrap? Is a hat I never thought I'd have to wear. Working with translation partnerships, it's kind of a flex, but it's a hat I have to wear. So, like, we have our games in seven languages currently. Nine if you include Latvian and something else, but those are bootlegs. So, anyway, but we need to deal with translation partners. We need to manage agreements and contracts with them. We need to have open conversations with them about projects, and we need to manage the flow of money for those, which is not something I ever thought I would have to deal with. And I'm honored and I'm happy about that, but it's weird, and it's very complicated, in a variety of ways. So there's a whole, you can have a whole conversation about translation and games and translation, for sure. That would be a whole hour.
Event design is something that I've had to do. Event coordination and design and even things like interior decorating
No,
for
you're
your
absolutely
convention
right.
booth. That's a huge thing. I mean, gosh, just like getting people together is a whole thing, but let alone the look of an event is.
Yeah. And attachment to that, online convention coordinator or online game day. managing, that can be a whole deal. I've done, you know, an online Nerdburger Con twice, probably going to do another one next year. That, you know, takes a bunch of time and a bunch of learning and like figure out like what's the best way to get people to sign up for stuff. How do you market that stuff to get people so that you have people there? Like what tools can you use in whatever, you know, in a Discord or whatever community you're working from that you can have in place. And then finding, and also just like when I was doing it was managing people too, because making sure you've got, you know, getting GMs pulled together and finding, you know, people to help kind of keep an eye on things in the Discord. Because like if I'm GMing something, I want to make sure somebody is who has some access can answer questions in like the Q&A channel
I
if
bet you
somebody comes
didn't.
in and
Yeah, I
has a
bet you didn't
question.
think
So
about that hat when you publish your very first game.
no, not at all.
I mean, it's good to be able to identify all these skills. You are building skills as a game designer, and those skills, even if you don't, if you if you're not a game designer for your full-time job, like you can include some of these skills. Like you know how to use InDesign or Affinity Publisher now. That is a marketable skill for other jobs that are not game design. You know how to be an editor. That is a skill for other jobs, event coordination, all of those things. They are valuable to you in your professional setting. And as you said at the top of the show, it's good for you. It's good, just good for your personal development. So good. And I think if you go back through and you actually look at all the skills too, like I don't know, you feel a nice sense of accomplishment. Like, ooh, I'm kind of a genius when I think about it with all the stuff I have to do.
It's an intimidating set of skills. Like if you are a regular game master, and if you're a game designer and a publisher, those are like that's a lot of stuff that includes soft skills and hard skills that actual employers find valuable, for real. So it's no joke.
And
Well,
learning is fun.
oh,
It is
right, of
fun.
course.
Learning is
Right.
just fun. Like, even if it's not something that you're going to use somewhere else, just like learning how to do a new thing, there's a certain satisfaction
Yeah,
that comes with
agreed.
that.
Yeah.
Jason, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up the show today?
No, this is great. I really hope that people listening are taking away from this the idea that this is actually pretty accessible rather than the opposite. These are all skills that you can cultivate, many skills that you might already have, some skills that you might never need, depending on your goals and your vision for your own creative process. That's the most important thing to me is that we be welcoming and open and excited about people trying this stuff, and not gatekeeping.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it is totally accessible, and you already have a lot of these skills. If you're listening to this podcast, you can go back through too and listen to some other things and figure out all those some details on other hats. Not that we have all of the answers,
Don't.
but it can give you somewhere to start. Jason, thank you so much for joining us today. This
It
has
was
been
my
great.
pleasure. This was great fun. Thanks very much.
Where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, my company's Bully Pulpit Games. You can find me at bullypulpitgames.com, and that's probably a good place to start.
Wonderful. You can find me at wannabegames.com or on itch at wannabegames, or on drive-through at wannabegames, and I'm also on Blue Sky at Josca. Or whatever the other stuff is with the Blue Sky. It has like other stuff on there. You can find me.
Yeah. Right now you can find Slay to Win, the card game on Kickstarter. Check it out. With any luck, when you go to look at it now, when you're listening to this, it's doing very well because I am Schrodinger's Kickstarter publisher right now. I don't know how it's going to go. but you can find me at the website, which is nerdburgergames.com. I am at Nerdburger Craig on a number of social medias, and the games are at DriveThruRPG.
Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel by Steph Sax, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sax, and thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.